Kia ora and welcome to Nerdman's Podcast, episode 259. Today is Friday, July 22nd, 2011. Well, I'm not recording in the morning, as I thought might be a good idea, but I am recording before I run my errands, on the theory that when I get back, I won't have enough time to record. So I guess that's moving in the right direction. Now, today I'm mostly going to be, I suppose, answering questions and so on that people have posed to me, or topics that they've raised. And that's going to be probably the bulk today. And, of course, I will have an election update, because that is one of the big stories now as we're getting ever closer to the magic day. But first, some items from the news that I wanted to share. There's a couple of big stories in the news. Well, one is definitely a big story, and the other probably ought to be. And the first is the Royal Commission of Inquiry into the Pike River mining disaster. Right now, it's focusing pretty much on what they're calling an obvious lack of safety measures. And that is kind of a duh sort of moment, because if the mine had been had better safety measures, then either it wouldn't have happened in the first place, or there wouldn't have been so many deaths. So I don't think that's telling anybody anything they don't already know. But anyway, so this is still going on, and at the moment there really haven't been any bombshells or anything as far as I can see. But I may mention it from time to time as more comes to light. There was another earthquake in Christchurch today, which is not unusual because there's been about 5,000 of them. But this one was 5.1, which is a reasonably good jolt, but it was about 40 kilometers from Christchurch, and so it didn't cause any damage in the city itself, apparently. But nevertheless, it was enough to remind people, as if they needed it, about how shaky the whole situation down there is still. But the story that probably ought to be news that isn't is the surging New Zealand dollar. Overnight, it hit 86 point some odd cents. I don't remember what it was exactly. It doesn't really matter because it is closing in on 90 U.S. cents, which most analysts think it's going to hit. And there's even talk that it could reach parity with U.S. dollar, which means that one New Zealand dollar and one U.S. dollar would be worth the same. And I don't know if it's ever been that high, but it certainly hasn't been that high since it was floated back in the 80s. And we are at the high last night was a new record high. And this has a lot of profound implications. I mean, first of all, and most obviously, it means that that imports are cheaper. And this is good for things like oil and petroleum and, anything that's imported, any imported good is cheaper, and that's good. But it means that our exports are more expensive. And, of course, as a small island nation, we are dependent on exports, and that's bad. So it's a mixed bag, and nobody really knows where it's going, of course. And people can offer their opinions, but they don't really know. Now, it's likely that our Reserve Bank is going to be raising interest rates in September because inflation is now at a 21-year high. And so it's certain that the Reserve Bank will raise interest rates, which will make mortgages more expensive for people, mortgage payments more expensive if, like us, they're on a floating rate. And that will, of course, come on top of huge increases in food and electricity and petrol and things like that. So it's going to make it tougher for quite a few people, and that will be a drag on the economy, especially when employment remains stubbornly high at 6.3% or whatever it is. 6.6%, I can't remember. I would have looked it up if I knew I was going to mention that. But anyway, it's high. It's 6 point something, and although lower than the U.S. And so that's all not good. And if the U.S. economy tanks, for instance, if they don't come to agreement on raising the debt ceiling, that will send the world back into recession, and that will affect New Zealand really badly because the economy is already weak. And I don't have any faith, I guess, in the current government to make things better, because they don't really seem to know what they're doing, to be honest, in my opinion. Their economic management has been really bad, and a lot of the things that they're doing are really dodgy decisions. They're replacing some of the rail stock, the cars, and they've decided to import them from China, which has cost about 100 jobs here in New Zealand. But that sort of gets into the election thing. Let's do that now.
Election Watch 2011.
Mr. Speaker!
Well, there have been a couple of developments this week, both of which actually touch on things I talked about last time. First, there was a new poll out, and this is from Roy Morgan, which I think is an Australian company, if I'm not mistaken. At any rate, it shows much more favorable ratings for Labor, a much more favorable result for Labor than we've had in quite a while. National is at 49%, which is down 5%. Labor is at 33.5%, which is up 3%. The Greens are at 7.5%, which is up 2%. Now, among the minor parties, ACT is up 0.5% to 3%, which is a big deal for them. But because of the level of the polling, or whatever you want to call it, they assume that there will be an overhang, which means that there would be some extra seats. Normally, our parliament has 120 seats, but if parties win seats and don't have enough party vote to entitle them to that seat, normally, then to restore proportionality, they expand the size of parliament. So based on this polling, this kind of would look like a 122-seat parliament, which means you need 62 seats to govern, a clear majority. And that would mean that the National Party and ACT, with the one-member party called United Future, would be the ones forming the government. They'd be the only ones who could. And that is why the existence of ACT in Parliament is a very big deal indeed. Now, the National Party has done is playing games with the Epsom electorate. Now, I mentioned that last time. It's currently held by the recently deposed leader of the party, Rodney Hyde. And the candidate that they've put up now is John Banks, who was twice elected and twice defeated for mayor of Auckland. He's a former National Party member of parliament. He was a former police minister and generally not a very nice fellow, apparently. But he has been put up by the ACT Party as their candidate. Now, in 2008, John Key basically did deal with ACT not to really run a candidate in the Epsom electorate, concentrating on the party vote instead. Now, you'll remember the party vote is the most important of the two votes because the party vote determines which party has a majority in parliament, not the number of electorate seats you won, because we have a proportional system. And so by concentrating on the party vote, that kind of guaranteed that Rodney Hyde would win the Epsom electorate and bring in more MPs with him. Now, John Banks is bragging that if he wins the electorate, he will bring in four or five or perhaps more MPs with him, which is just, it is possible, but it's not likely on current polling that they would get that many seats. On current polling, maybe two or three, altogether, including him. And so that's not a very promising thing. But the idea that there could be all of these ACT MPs in Parliament, not because anybody voted for them, but because National did a deal in order to get them into Parliament, it stinks, quite frankly. And here's the thing. That is one of the major complaints that people have with the MMP system, that parties can do these backroom deals in order to kind of exploit weaknesses in the system. And the irony in this is that both National and ACT are campaigning against MMP and in favor of this other system called SM, or Supplemental Member, which has the worst of both MMP and First Past the Post. It's a really terrible system, and both parties want it because it will allow them to it will allow the National Party to dominate Parliament, even if they're unpopular. They'll probably continue to form governments just as they did under First Past the Post. And so that's hugely ironic that they are exploiting MMP to get them in when they both want to end MMP. And it's kind of despicable, really, that they would do that. But be that as it may, that is what they're doing. Now, National's part in this is they put in a patsy candidate who is not a serious challenger. He wrote a biography of John Banks many years ago, and it's been called how you pronounce the word, hagiography, whatever. It's this fawning, sycophantic propaganda piece, really. And he wrote another one about Don Brash, who's now the leader of the ACT Party. So there's no way this guy's going to make a strong run for the seat. And I saw him on the TV news the other day, and he was saying that he was campaigning for the party vote, and people would do with the electorate vote whatever they felt like. Now, if you are in Epsom, this is one of the things that a lot of pundits have been saying. For Epsom voters, why would they not vote for the ACT candidate knowing that they would get five MPs? Because it's a conservative district. There's no doubt about that. But I don't think that the average national voter looks at it that way, because these are ACT MPs. They're not national party MPs, and these are national party people. They don't necessarily want ACT. The only reason they're doing it is because their party leader, the prime minister, is telling them to do it. And they're still going to give their party vote to national, of course. So I don't know. And ACT is not really popular in Auckland because they're the party that pushed through the rebranding or rebuilding or remaking or reshaping or whatever you want to call it of Auckland. And that has not been a popular thing. And they may be punished in the polls because of that. But the question is how? Because the candidate that National has put up is not running a serious campaign. He's just there as a patsy. He'll get no doubt he'll get a very high list placing with National, so he'll get into Parliament regardless, which means that the Epsom people certainly would have two MPs representing them from two different parties because of this guy going, his name is Paul Goldsmith, going in on the list. And this is assuming that John Banks wins. And that is legitimate to say, saying that they would bring, that Epsom voters would get five MPs is just silly, because these other ACT MPs would not have anything to do with Epsom. But so I don't know. But here's the thing. I have said on Twitter, and I also said on a post, on a comment to a post on a leading political blog site here in New Zealand, that I think that Labour voters and Green Party voters should vote for the National Party candidate in that electorate. The idea being that if John Banks is defeated in Epsom, ACT will almost certainly be gone from Parliament. And if they're gone from Parliament, that makes it far more likely that Labour and the Greens could form a coalition government. So, I mentioned that in a comment, and I also have said it on Twitter. I'm eventually going to do a blog post as well. And I should emphasize that this is what I think voters should do. I don't think the parties should have any part in trying to organize this for a lot of reasons, none the least of which it's kind of not dishonest exactly, because it's nothing dishonest about voting strategically, but it is it's just not done. Let's say that. Now, the author of the blog, the blog is called Kiwi Politico, and the author Lou had a further post about Epsom, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And I'll just read the paragraph that relates to what I'm talking about. He says, "A further comment on Labour's response in Epsom is also warranted. Arthur, in comments to my post linked above," that's me, "suggested that the best way to nix ACT in the 2011 election is for all Labour and Green voters to cast electorate votes for the national candidate, Paul Goldsmith, in the hope this will send a signal to national voters who are unhappy with the horse trading between ACT and National that it might be worth defecting. This is, in principle, a strong strategy, and it has been picked up by some Green supporters as well. But I think it's the wrong strategy in this case, for five reasons. First, it's a complex and counterintuitive strategy, and it's extremely hard to get so many people on both sides to act against their own instincts like that. Second, the value proposition made by ACT, six for the price of one, is simply too good for a meaningful number of national voters to pass up. Third, it would require Labour to publicly endorse a national candidate, which would permit John Key to proclaim that even the opposition supports the National Party. Fourth, the electorate demographics for Epsom don't stack up. This electorate bleeds blue, and even if a fair proportion of disgruntled NAT voters defected, I don't think there would be enough Green and Labour voters to prevail. Fifth, it would require Labour to buy into the electoral system rorting, making them no better than the National and ACT parties." So that's the paragraph that's relevant to my comment on the subject. And I think he's right. I don't disagree with him too much, except on a couple of points. I don't think that the 6-for-1 or 5-for-1 or whatever argument is really going to sway Epsom voters, because they don't necessarily like ACT. ACT has been doing a lot of really racist things lately, and just saying a lot of racist things, and not in the sort of way that the average Kiwi might say, well, he's got a point, but just kind of overtly racist. And that doesn't wash well, even in true blue districts like electorates like Epsom. And also, I think that they want National. They don't want ACT. And they're only doing it because they've, as I said before, they've been asked to, and because they think it will help their party form government. It's not the same thing as being very enthusiastic about it. And I think a lot of people, given half a shove, would probably come home to National rather than vote for ACT, regardless of, especially if National is polling well going into the election, they may be willing to take the risk that that they will be able to have National govern without ACT. So I don't know. But the other thing is, I don't think that it is that this strategy would require Labor or the Greens to buy into electoral system rorting, because I don't think it is a rort. This is strategic voting. And this is something that any sensible voter in any electorate should consider doing from time to time. If they live in an electorate that is really blue, or red, for that matter, or green, or whatever, I don't think there are any that are that green, and they know that their candidate cannot possibly win, it might make more sense for them to give their vote to one who can. For instance, in 2005, in the Coromandel electorate, which is the only electorate to ever elect a Green Party MP so far, there was no way in hell that the Green Party candidate was going to win. She actually was co-leader at the time, but she said she was running for just the party vote. If the Green Party votes had gone to Labor, it would have been a much more competitive race. I don't think they would have won, but still, it's the kind of thing where a center-left voter who supports the Greens may have said, right, I'm going to give my party vote to Greens, but the Labor candidate stands a chance of winning, so I'm going to vote for the Labor candidate. Well, that didn't happen, and it hasn't happened, as far as I'm aware, in any electorate yet. Kiwis just don't quite seem to feel comfortable doing strategic voting. Now, Lou made a point there about there not being enough Labor and Green voters in Epsom to make a difference, and he is right about that, because they're both distant second and third place parties in terms of party vote and so on. But if you look at the 2008 results, Rodney Hyde had 21,000 votes, which is a very large majority. But if all of the Green and all of the Labor votes had gone to the National Party candidate, he would have had, something like 16,000? No, it's more than that. Close to 19,000 or whatever. Anyway, it would have been much closer. Now, he wouldn't have won. Rodney Hyde still would have won, but it would have been competitive at that stage. And if the results were that close, it's entirely possible that some of the National Party voters might have defected and gone back to their own party and voted for the National Party candidate, and Rodney would have lost, and we wouldn't have had ACT in Parliament for the past 3 years. So I think it could work. I think if enough Labor and Green voters were to say, we don't want ACT in Parliament, this is the only thing we can do to try to ensure that they don't get into Parliament and just hold a nose and vote for the National Party candidate. If I lived in Epsom, that is exactly what I would do. But I don't live in Epsom, so obviously I can't. At this stage, there's no way I could do any strategic voting here in my electorate. The National Party candidate will win. I don't think there's any doubt about that whatsoever. And as far as I know, the only opposition will be from the Labor Party candidate. So if I don't want to vote for the National guy, and I don't want to, that means I probably will. My only option will be to vote for the Labor candidate, even though she can't possibly win. But we'll see. So my point in bringing all this up is that strategic voting is a sensible thing to do under MMP. Some Kiwis get really uncomfortable with the idea of doing that because they think it's kind of underhanded. And most of them, I think, don't actually understand the whole process and what it means to do strategic voting and why it's a good thing. I mean, that's what the system is designed for. It's designed so that you can get the government you want. That we get the government that the people want collectively, that Parliament reflects the wants, needs, and desires of the people. And there is no way that ACT has nowhere near enough support in the country to get 5 or 6 MPs in Parliament. That's just not the way. They are nowhere near that popular. So the sensible thing to do is to knock them out by defeating that one candidate. And if that happened, then they would have to rely on getting 5% or more of the party vote to get in Parliament, and they wouldn't achieve that. I don't think they've crossed 5% since Oh, maybe the first election, maybe 96 or maybe 2002, or sorry, 99, because I don't think they did in 2002. I think they did even worse in 2002. So my, it's just, I wish more people would at least entertain the idea of voting strategically, because as I said, if I lived in Epsom, that's what I would be doing. And that is the election update for this episode. I don't know if there'll be another one next time. Depends on if anything happens or not. But now let's go on to the next section, which is dealing with questions and topics raised by others. And to kick it off, I have a voicemail from Bank.
Oh, hi, Arthur. It's Bank here, Kiwi Bank, who's in Santa Fe. And I am back in Santa Fe now after 6 weeks in Dunedin. Had a great time. It was an extended trip for us. I've been back pretty often in the 20 years since I've left, but 6 weeks was the longest I have lived in New Zealand since my early 20s, and it was pretty different, actually, than the flying visits we usually make. We rented a house for ourselves and got to much more kind of really live there, I guess. And the thing I really noticed with the longer visit was that I got to spend more time with friends and family and drill a little deeper into what's going on in their lives. And that was actually very useful, very something I was very happy to do, although mostly the things I came to see were negative. I guess, you know, normally when we come in, everyone puts their most cheerful face forward, and I got to see things like, you know, an old friend of mine is not so much intermittently really busy as intermittently, you know, depressed is what's going on with her, and, you know, other things like that. So in some ways, not all cheerful, but I feel much more aware and connected with all those people. So it was a great experience for us. And we got to enjoy Dunedin in winter, but the weather was not too bad. So I have, in response to your couple of recent podcasts, some unsolicited and solicited advice. So the unsolicited advice is about exercise, and you'd said how you've kind of going to have to ramp that up. I went through something a few years ago now where I realized I was on a track to become problematically overweight, unless I actually did something about it. So I kind of went through perhaps a similar thing. And the piece of advice I have is that you might like to consider using a personal trainer for just a little while. Usually you can see somebody just like for a set of maybe three sessions or something like that to kind of get you started. I discovered that, you know, gym class 20 years ago had not really prepared me much for working out what an effective way for me to get exercise into my life was. And the woman I worked with was really helpful at working, showing me what I needed to be doing and what I didn't need to worry about. And she, in particular, introduced me to heart rate monitors and using that to monitor whether I was being active enough, but I didn't have to go totally balls to the wall every time I tried to work out. And where does that phrase come from anyway? But that's a side one. So that's my piece of unsolicited advice. The solicited advice, you asked about ideas for video podcasts and having just been home recently. What about a trip to the supermarket? I found it interesting to look at just how the supermarkets look different in New Zealand from America. The way the produce is, you know, the different things you can buy in the produce section that you can't buy in America. Differences in the way things are packaged and marketed and slogans. I was looking at the beer case and looking at a few crates of Spates, the fine Dunedin beer, and of course its slogan is Pride of the South. That would play really differently in America from the way it plays in New Zealand. So anyway, that's just a thought. And then finally, just having followed the New Zealand news a little bit, I was wondering if you had any thoughts about Hana Tamaki's push for being president of the Maori Women's Welfare League. My main thought is, well, why does she have blonde hair? And more to the point, why does she want to be president? What is the big payoff to getting control of that organization? Oh, and then also with the news stories about the Mossad having a cell in Christchurch at the time of the earthquake, the big question that seems to be that's not being asked is, why would they want to be spying on New Zealand anyway? Okay, those are my thoughts for right now. And as always, I enjoy the podcast. Bye.
Well, thanks for that, Bank. And it's actually funny, some of the things you said that we've actually said similar things, and I'll get to that a little bit as I go. First of all, however, I want to publicly apologize to Bank, because when I got the phone message, I realized that she'd sent me an email last month, a month ago today, I think it was, and I meant to reply to it. I put it aside and I'm going to sit down when I've got the time and do a longer response, and I never did. So I publicly apologize to Bank for that. But she actually raised some interesting topics in that email, and I'm going to go back and do that as well. I talk about that as well. But first, about the phone message, about the things she raised in the phone message. And exercise first. We've actually talked about getting a personal trainer. It's not just that I don't like gyms, gym memberships, all that sort of thing. It's that I don't even like the idea of them. And I think it's because I despised gym class so much when I was a kid that I have this almost visceral reaction to the idea of going to a gym, much less actually doing it. So it's not ruled out, but it's not necessarily ruled in very much either. It's kind of a maybe sort of thing. Sort of like when my mother, when I was a kid, and she'd say, "We'll see," which always meant no, but anyway. But it is under consideration. But we have this elliptical here in the house. Neither of us have ever used it. Well, actually, Nigel did a little bit. And my goal is to get to the point where I feel comfortable doing that. Because, I mean, when this all started, I was told, well, I should go for walks and things. But I frankly just don't have the time to go on walks for an hour or 2 hours or whatever. And so I don't think that's going to be a much of a goer. Using the elliptical would be a much better option for me because of my limited time. I did get a pedometer. I think I mentioned this. I got a pedometer. And so far, my biggest day was 6,700 odd steps, a bit more than that. But a typical day is like half that, maybe, or even less, especially when I'm during my work week, when I might at most get a couple thousand in, because I'm sitting all day, obviously, doing my work. But I noticed I was losing about a pound a week when this all started, which isn't a huge amount, but it's a slow amount, which makes it theoretically anyway more sustainable. And then during my work project week, I actually gained back a little bit, I think like 200 or 300 grams. So we're not talking about a huge amount, but because I tend to be a stress eater, and when I'm stressed or depressed or whatever, I often eat. And I guess it was fairly remarkable. I didn't gain more than I did, but now I'm back where I was in the first place, and it's been stable for a couple of weeks. I haven't gained or lost. So in the overall scheme of things, it's probably pretty good, because I wasn't feeling well last week, and so I didn't get much exercise. So I suppose stasis is probably a good thing to have. The supermarket idea is actually a really good one, because whenever Nigel and I go to the U.S. or Australia, for that matter, we like to go in the grocery store and look around, see what products they offer, what's the same, what's different, and so on. And that could actually be really cool. I will have to work out how to do that exactly, because they don't usually allow you to film inside their stores. So I'd probably have to get permission, and that actually might be easier for the New World chain, which Bank is probably familiar with, because they are essentially franchised. The managers usually own the locations, because the company that's part of New World Pack and Save and Foursquare, it's a cooperative. It's not a corporation. And it would probably be easier to film in one of their stores than in one of the chain ones from the Australian company Progressive Enterprises. I don't know. We'll see. But I will work on that, because I think that's a very good idea. Now, you asked about Hanatomiki. Well, first, for the benefit, I can't remember if I've mentioned her in the past or not, but Hannah Tomicki is the wife of Brian Tomicki, the self-appointed bishop of a cult called Destiny Church. And I decided some time ago I was going to drop the pretense of referring to them, generally speaking, as a church, because they're not. It is far more cult-like than it is church-like. It is an extreme fundamentalist church. I think it's loosely affiliated with Assemblies of God or something like that. I can't remember exactly. Brian Tomicki's spiritual father, as he calls him, is Bishop Eddie Long, who you may recall settled out of court with some young men who claimed that he sexually abused them. And when that guy came to New Zealand for the for some sort of blessing of Tamaki, maybe it was when he made himself a bishop, I don't know, he brought one or two of these teenage boys with him. And, yeah, so, you know, company you keep and all that. Hannah, his wife, is involved in the cult. She has blonde hair, which is not a normal condition for a Maori or Polynesian person. She's Maori, and the typical name for that in New Zealand is waka blonde. It's a derogatory term, and a waka is a canoe, and it's a fake color, because Maori are not blonde by nature. And I don't know why she has blonde hair. Nigel and I have often commented on that too. Like, what's the blonde hair about? It seems to me ironic that she should want to head an organization set up to promote the welfare of Maori women when she's not proud enough of her own Maori-ness to have her natural hair color. Now, you can say, well, why should that matter? Because, you know, people change their hair color all the time, women in particular. But it does matter when the group that you're fronting is about empowering and looking after Maori women. It's almost a physical manifestation of what you are is not good enough. And that's why that makes me very uncomfortable. She, of course, is an ultra-fundamentalist, as her husband is. And she has set up 10 chapters, I think they're called, of this group in her churches. Now, the organization requires that all of the chapters be non-denominational and non-sectarian or whatever. And the allegation was that these were set up specifically as recruitment tools for Tamaki's cult. So the Maori Women's Welfare League threw her off the ballot, and Hannah went to the High Court, and they ruled that the organization had acted illegally and ordered that the ballots be reissued with her name on it. So she is running for president of the Maori Women's Welfare League, and I presume that all 10 of her church chapters will be able to vote as well. Now, as to what it is she wants, I think it's twofold. One is to add legitimacy to the Tamaki cult, because they will it'll just look like they're a real organization more than a cult in their view. I think that's part of it. And I also think that they want to use it as a way of recruiting more people into their cult. And they would call it evangelizing, and they would call it getting church members. But since it's such a cult-like thing, and if you want to know more about the Destiny Church, you can go to the New Zealand Herald website and search on their site, because they've done a lot of really hard-hitting investigation into the way that the so-called church operates. I think that's what it's about. It's about legitimizing their cult as a real church or whatever, and also about recruiting more people into it. I think that's what it's all about. I think it has absolutely nothing to do with Maori welfare of women or anyone else. And about the Mossad thing, that's a really weird story. And I actually don't feel like I know enough to be sure that I can really comment on it in any great detail. It was revealed today that that authorities did talk to some of these people. The gist of it is that some young Israelis were in Christchurch at the time of the earthquake, and a couple of them were killed. And apparently one of them had 5 different passports, which is usually a sign of an operative. And Mossad has in the past come to New Zealand and obtained passports in other people's names. And they've done that in other countries, not just New Zealand. And although they deny that, or usually deny that. So it's a very strange story. And I did notice that when the story first broke that the left was belittling it. Like, oh, come on, what are you going to talk about now, the global Zionist conspiracy? Well, it turns out that there is actually something to this story. So I don't know what's going to come of it. But, Bengt, when you said, what the hell were they doing in New Zealand? That's exactly what Nigel and I said. We're like, we're not exactly a high-value target or whatever. Why would they be here? Unless it had something to do with using us as a staging operation to get somewhere else, so it looks less suspicious. I don't know. But when I know more about the story, I'll probably comment on it then. But at the moment, it's just too weird and too unsettled. I don't know that we ever will know the full story. But It's been said that this was leaked by the SIS, which is the spy agency. And it's also been said that that's done when they want to prove their worth, usually to a new government. They'll leak something to say, see, we're on top of things. I don't know if that's true either. This story is just too weird and too in flux to really have much of an opinion about it. But the thing that makes me raise an eyebrow is basically the what on earth are they be doing here aspect of it. But we'll see. Now, I did mention Banks' email from last month. And she was in Dunedin at the time and talking about... that's Sunny saying hi. This is another reason I don't like recording during the day, because the dogs are more likely to bark. Anyway, she's talking about the experience of being back in the country after a long time away and that sort of thing. And towards the end, she actually asked some questions. She talks about this disconnection, I suppose, or sense of alienation from one's homeland after living away from it from quite some time. And she said, have you grappled with this, or is it not an issue? How often do you get back stateside, and how do you decide how much of a priority is it? I just reread it. It's basically what she said. I messed it up. But anyway, that's the gist of it. And I have absolutely dealt with those exact same issues. The last time I was in Chicago, it was really strange. This was late 2007, early 2008. And I think I might have met a podcaster when I was there that time. I can't remember if I did or who. Or anyway. And it was Tom the Ramble Redhead, of course. And I was struck by how familiar things were and yet how completely unfamiliar they were too, including the grocery store. When I went to the local grocery store, one I had shopped at in the past, and it was different, and it was way different than a New Zealand one. And it just was kind of disorienting, I guess, to be in a place that was familiar and yet completely unfamiliar at the same time. And I've definitely experienced that. I certainly feel when I come back to New Zealand now, I feel like I'm coming home. I don't feel like I'm going somewhere else. And I don't necessarily feel like I'm going home when I go back to the U.S., probably because my life is here more than this disconnect or whatever. But it is certainly something I'm aware of. And we've only been to the U.S. together twice, in 1997 and 1999. We haven't been back since. And of course, I was back roughly 10 years later. Not quite. What would that be? 8 years later. And I haven't been back since then myself. And it's one of those things where we want to do it, but there have been a lot of barriers that made that impossible. Changing jobs, moving around. There were family tragedies some years back, about the time we would have been going to the U.S. for our next trip, because we were at that time planning on going every other year or every 2 years or something. And so for a variety of reasons, we just sort of, we got out of the cycle, and then there were reasons why we couldn't do it financially, or because, as I said, of new jobs, having just moved, bought a new house, whatever. And we've never gotten back into the mode. Now, we are talking about, we know that we have to make it, not, it sounds like an obligation, we know we have to make a trip, but we do, because it has been so long, and we will, we just don't know when. We did look into the possibility of coming this year and going to the Pride 48 festivities in Las Vegas, but the cost is prohibitive, and that's only part of it, of course. We also are not really ready to go, and I don't mean that there's no easy, I don't know how to explain it exactly. It's not that we want to be, thin and beautiful when we go, but we want to be able to enjoy ourselves and not get tired from being, well, in my case anyway, being overweight and all that. So physically, I don't feel ready to go there yet. And as I said, it is really quite expensive, so we have to be prepared at that time. And New Zealand just had a special where it was $1,900 return to Los Angeles or San Francisco, and you could go to Las Vegas, Chicago, I think New York, and I've forgotten a couple other cities for an additional $7, which is a good deal. But as I said, we're just not ready to go, because September, of course, is only about 6 weeks away, 5 or 6 weeks away, and we're just not ready to go. So we won't be going this year, I don't think. And probably, well, possibly sometime next year. It's entirely possible. But the priority hasn't been to go. The priority has been to, you know, have our lives here and enjoy our lives here and do things here and so on. Of course, as everyone knows, planes go in both directions. And since I've been here, I've had, well, Jason has come to visit me, of course, and some other friends have come a couple times in the early years, not since the 90s. Jason is the only one so far this century who's come to visit me, and none of my family has ever been here, and I don't know that they ever will come here, to be honest. So, you know, it's I don't want to make it sound like I'm being petulant or anything, but I don't necessarily want it to be all on me to go to the U.S. to visit friends and family. Most people don't travel that much, especially not long-haul flights like that. Most people do it once or twice in their lifetimes, if that. They don't go every couple of years or whatever like we were planning on doing many, many years ago. So I don't know. It's something that it's a bit of a sore spot with me. Because I would like to go. Sometimes I feel obligated and that I should go. But the time, the huge amount of time it takes to do it, 2 days to get there in terms of calendar days, the amount of recovery time you need at each end, so the physical toll, and the financial toll, it's all really big. And so I have a lot of mixed emotions about it, I guess, more than a sore spot. I've got a lot of mixed emotions about that. So anyway, that's those subjects. And now I have another voicemail message.
This is AFAX. No, it's not. Arthur, it's Roger. I wanted to know if you could explain what makes a show not worthy of being podcast. For instance, you said did this one 3 or 4 times. And frankly, if I could never do something 3 or 4 times because I'm just too damn impatient. So I'm curious of what was wrong with not just this last show, but your other shows over the years that you've decided not to air, unless it's some sort of egregious error that you made. I'm not quite sure what that might be. Thank you. Bye.
Well, thanks for that, Roger. Actually, it's a bit of all of those things that have kept me from posting shows. What it is more often than not is that I start recording a show and I get interrupted and I don't get back to it. And it may be a day or two or three before I can finish it. And by that time, I think I'm just going to start over again, partly because my voice wouldn't match up. I think there have been times when I've said in the show and I recorded the first part earlier and I'm carrying on or whatever. But as a general rule, I haven't done. Maybe I should. Maybe I should say, well, I recorded the first part 2 days ago and didn't have time to finish them, whatever. If that's a concern for me, and obviously it is. Now, there have been times when I have said things that either were wrong or maybe I thought better of it or maybe I thought I wasn't clear enough and I wanted to revisit the topic. And so I've re-recorded for that reason as well. That actually happened not so very long ago, and I can't even remember what it was about. It wasn't anything earth-shattering, but I do want to be right about things, and I don't want to say something that's wrong. And once I got better information, I just re-recorded. So that's really all it is. It's usually got to do with time more than anything. But, so I hope that answers your question. He also said on the site, damn, with that title, Stormy Weather, I thought I'd hear some Billie Holiday or Lena Horne or Ella Fitzgerald. Well, I thought the same thing, except that I don't have the copyrights. Well, Nigel's home. I'm going to go. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's ARTHUR, at amrenspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.